All right. Welcome. Welcome, everyone. Justin Bader here with Ascend Live. Our topic today is nailing virtual interviews. And I'm so excited to talk about virtual interviews because I know they're going to be a huge part of hiring this year. See, virtual interviews have been on the way for a while, but this year, because of the pandemic, because nobody wants to do interviews in person, quite a challenge, there is an unprecedented surge in adding virtual interviews to the hiring process. So that is our topic. That is our focus today. Leave me a comment and let me know that you're here. Just say hi or something like that to let me know that you're here on Ascend Live. And this is our essential question. How can I succeed in virtual interviews at the screening, shortlist, and finalist stages? It's likely that much of the process, not just the screening stage this year, but a lot of the process is going to be virtual. And virtual is different. It is different. It is simply a different process. It's a different experience for you as the candidate to interview virtually. And if you're prepared for that, that can put you at a huge advantage compared to people who are just expecting it to be the same as a face-to-face interview. Because let me tell you, it is not the same as a face-to-face interview. It's very different, and you got to prepare accordingly. So let's get right to it. Welcome Leslie and Janine and Monica and Amy and Melody. Welcome, welcome. Let's talk about what is different about virtual interviews and how you can succeed if your first interview is virtual or if other interviews are virtual. This is Ascend Live, by the way, where we talk about the Ed Leadership job search. So here's the hardest part. Let's start with this. The hardest part of virtual interviews is that you have to talk to no one for long enough to make the case that you are the best person for the job. You have to speak confidently, and you have to speak for long enough that you make your case. And this is difficult. It is awkward because you have been trained your whole life not to talk about yourself and go on and on and on and on, regardless of how other people react, right? We're socialized from a very early age to pay attention to the cues that other people give us in conversation. And if you just kind of barrel ahead, don't pay any attention, and just talk, you are a rude person. That is the message that we are socialized with. And of course, that's good advice, right? Like, don't, in a normal social context, in a normal conversation, you don't want to just talk and not care what anybody says, not care about the looks on people's faces or the checking of the watch or the sighs or the eye contact or anything like that. It's rude to ignore that stuff. But in a virtual interview, my friend, that is exactly what you have to do. This is why it is tricky, because you have to talk about yourself for a good 3, 4, 5 minutes at a stretch without any feedback. You will get no feedback from the people who are interviewing you. If you have been through a virtual interview, what I'd like to ask you to do is say me in the comments. Just leave a comment right here on Facebook Live and say me if this has ever happened to you. You're in the virtual interview. They are asking you questions. Maybe there are real people there asking you questions and real people there listening, and they're on Zoom or whatever, and they're taking notes, but they don't give you any feedback whatsoever. They give you nothing. Dana says, that's me. Leslie says, me. Welcome, Larry. Welcome, Susan. Great to see you here. Fabulous, fabulous. So this is tricky, right? It is tricky to talk without feedback. And even as experienced as I am at doing this, at talking into the camera, it feels weird to me when nobody leaves a comment. So I'm always checking, did somebody leave a comment? You can hear the little beeps going as people leave comments. I love to have your comments. That's why I do this show live. It's not pre-recorded, because I love to have your comments and participation, just to know that somebody is out there listening. It's very reassuring. But I want to encourage you and challenge you, really, to get over that need for reassurance, because it can be crippling in a virtual interview. If you're counting on the person on the other side of the computer to give you positive feedback, to smile and nod and encourage you to keep talking, then what's going to happen is A, they're not going to do that, and B, your brain is going to tell you to shut it down, to just say, okay, I'm done. They're not giving me any feedback that I should continue talking, so you're going to run out of things to say. You do not want that to happen, because you're going to get to the end of the interview and find that you've only used 9 minutes out of the 30 that you've been given, and you do not want to be in that situation. So what you want to do is you want to use all of the time that you are given. Let's talk about time. This is a good one to take a screenshot of if you're on your phone, or if you've got your phone and you're watching on your computer, take a photo with your phone. This is important stuff here. You want to practice for 5 minute answers. Now, you will not always have 5 minutes per question, but at the beginning of an interview, you can look at the number of questions, or you can ask them, how many questions do you have and how much time do we have? And then you can just, you know, do the math. How many minutes do I have per question? Usually it's going to be in the 3 to 5 minute range. They're going to have enough questions that you're not going to have more than 5 minutes per question. And they're going to give you enough time that typically you have, 3 to 5 minutes. Sometimes I've seen extremely rapid paced questions, rapid fire questions, where they'll just have like 9 questions and 15 minutes or something like that. And you've got a minute and a half to answer or so. So whatever the scenario is, ask at the beginning of the interview, and then you can adjust as you go. But when it comes to practice, this is really critical. I want you to practice 5 minute answers, because if you practice for 3 minutes and then you get 5 minutes in the actual interview, what's going to happen? Well, it's like a stand-up comedian. If you only prepared 3 minutes of material, what are you going to do for the rest of your set, right? What are you going to do for the rest of your time in the interview? What's going to happen is you're going to ramble, or you're going to waste it. And we do not want those two things to happen. So practice for 5 minutes. You can always go faster. You can always cut your answer short if you need to. But you need to have 5 minutes of material prepared and rehearsed for each question. Even though you don't know exactly what questions you're going to be asked, you want to make sure that you are ready to talk for 5 minutes. And if you can talk for 5 minutes on just about any question, you're going to be in incredible shape. If you don't have my 52 practice interview questions, you can get them at principalcenter.com/interview, and you'll be able to download those, print those out, write out bullet point answers, and really be sure that you're ready to speak to anything, specifically for 5 minutes. And again, you can adjust if you need to. I also want to encourage you to work stories into your answers as you practice. But when you're telling a story, you want to be really careful that the story doesn't dominate the whole answer, because typically you're asked to speak to several things in the question, and you want to make sure you're giving yourself enough time to answer all parts of the question and bring the focus back to yourself, your leadership, your qualifications, and not dwell too much on the details of the story. So if you have a good story, practice telling that story in 1 minute. And I've seen the difference that can make. Typically, the first time you try a story, it takes 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. And then you figure out, okay, I didn't really need to include those details. And you can really hone it down to just the essentials. Now, let's talk about some other considerations for virtual interviews. We've talked about length. We've talked about dealing with the lack of feedback that you get. You know, you're not going to get any smiles and encouragement and nodding from the people on the other side of the computer. In fact, let me know, have you ever been on an interview where there's no one on the other side of the computer? It tells you just like, we're recording you, say your answers and somebody will watch them later. Has that ever happened to you? Give me a yes. If you have ever had a screening interview where there was actually nobody there with you live and it just got recorded. I'm seeing that more and more. There is now software that districts are using that allows them to have lots and lots of people do these screening interviews without having to spend any time of their own, like showing up at a certain time. Like, it's just much more convenient for them if they can have you record. Yes, Leslie says yes. Dana says yes. Monica says yes. Tamika says yes. Whoever is making and selling the software is apparently doing very well. It's kind of everywhere. All of a sudden. So don't expect there to be an actual human at your first screening interview. I think that typically is starting to become the first step, that there's a robo screening. Basically, you're leaving them a video voicemail and they'll watch it and they'll contact you if they like your answers. So what about the on-screen aspects? Let's talk about some specifics for eye contact and dealing with the camera. First of all, I want to encourage you to find a camera setup, whether, you know, based on what kind of computer you have. You know, if you have an iMac, your camera is probably pretty good. If you're interviewing from an iMac, typically it's kind of at eye level. It's not pointed at some weird angle. Just make sure you're, you know, close enough to it and you should be in good shape. If you are on a laptop, here is what I want you to watch out for. You want to watch out for this angle. Hi, I'm here to interview today. Great to meet you. So nice to meet you. Right? If your laptop is way down on the desk and you're in a really tall chair and you're looking down at it, that camera on your laptop is going to look right up your nose. And you don't want to have everybody looking up your nose. You want it to be not distracting. Right now, I've got a kind of a pro streaming setup here, and I've got a camera that's right at my eye level. So if I am sitting normally in my chair and I'm looking straight out, This camera is a good foot and a half at least above the surface of my desk, and you've got to figure out how to make that work for you. So if you're using a laptop, get some board games or some, you know, encyclopedias, or if you still have encyclopedias, and stack them up on your desk so that when you turn your laptop to 90 degrees, it's right at eye level, right? You don't want your laptop open like this, looking up at the ceiling. You want your laptop at 90 degrees, so you want to raise it up and be able to make eye contact with the camera at eye level. You especially want to be mindful of this if you have like a ceiling fan or just anything up there that's distracting. You know, find a good backdrop that's not distracting, and that will really allow the focus of your interview to be you. Because here's the thing with distractions, right? We don't want the interview team to pay attention to things other than your answers. We don't want them to pay attention to your nostrils. We don't want them to pay attention to the cat on top of a bookshelf. We don't want them to pay attention to the ceiling fan and the thing going around and around. We want them to pay attention to you. And the good news is that you have total control over what comes across in your virtual interview. It's much easier to control the environment in a virtual interview. You don't have to worry about going someplace physically, driving across town, getting lost, getting sweaty, walking into the building, or, you know, anything like that. It's much easier to control what the interview team sees, but that means practicing and doing the work ahead of time to get yourself ready, to get your setup good, makes a ton of difference. One thing I don't have on my slides here, but that I will mention, is make sure your back is not to a window during daylight. Like if it's bright outside and your back is to the window and the camera is pointing out the window, it's gonna be really hard to see your face. So it's nice to have, I have a window over here, so during daylight hours, I get some nice light from the side. That works really well. Or if you're sitting across from a window with the window's light shining on you, that's great lighting. Just make sure your back is not to a window, because that's gonna really darken and everything and make it hard to see your face. Next, let's talk about eye contact. Now, I have years and years of experience looking into a camera where nobody is there, right? I cannot see your face on the other side of this camera, but you might have noticed that throughout this show that we've been doing, I've been mostly making eye contact. And I will sometimes break eye contact and look off to the side. I will sometimes look down at my computer to hit a button and change the slide or whatever. But for the most part, I'm making eye contact with the camera. And this is huge for the connection that you make with the people on the other side of the computer, right? For people to connect with you, they need to feel like you're making eye contact with them. Now, it would be much easier for me to look at my slides a foot down here on my laptop screen rather than to look into the camera. It's much easier for me to read my slides and remind myself of what I'm going to say, but this show is going to get pretty boring if I'm looking down here, right? It's gonna feel weird if I should be looking up here and I'm looking down here. So this is something that you've really got to practice. You've got to practice looking into the camera. And it's awkward at first, but it's really not that difficult. It is pretty easy to get in the habit of looking at the camera. Now, what's tricky though, is if you're on Zoom or if you're on Microsoft Teams and there are other people there on camera, it's going to be tempting to want to look at their faces, right? Camera's up here, their faces are down here. I'm going to want to make eye contact. Just intuitively, I want to look at my screen, right? That's not what you want to do. What you need to do is look at the camera. That is how you will make eye contact. And it's gonna be weird. Again, you want that feedback. You want them to be smiling and nodding. But here's the thing. It does not matter if they are or not. You've got time. You've got 5 minutes per question or 3 minutes per question or even 90 seconds per question, whatever they're giving you. And your job, my friend, is to use all of that time. It is not to monitor their interest level and adjust your answer and just stop talking if they look bored. No, it is your job to use all of your time in as engaging and compelling a way as you possibly can. Now, at the same time, you don't want to just like dead stare into the camera the whole time, right? Like don't be the deer caught in headlights. You don't want to just stare into the camera. You want to be able to move a little bit and you want to be able to look around the room as you think. Think about the way that you converse with other people normally. Do you just stare into their eyes the entire time? At least in American culture, in North American culture, we typically don't do that. You know, it's okay to break eye contact when you're thinking. It's okay to break eye contact when you're gesturing. And it's okay to look around the room. Now, obviously, you don't want to like look at this person and then look at that person. Like there aren't people there on a virtual interview. So mostly you want to be looking into the camera, but it's okay to break eye contact strategically, especially when you're thinking and you don't want to just kind of lock eyes with the camera. Now, these are the techniques that I can share with you that work for me as someone who's done live stream shows for a number of years now. And I promise these are pretty easy things to learn with a little bit of practice. So lift your laptop up, set it on some board games or set it on some books, and practice looking into that camera. Practice not looking at the faces next time you're in a Zoom meeting. I know you're going to be in some meetings this week, right? Some non-interview, just kind of normal staff meetings, PLC meetings, district meetings. You're going to be on some Zoom meetings this week. I know you are probably, right? Practice not looking at other people's faces, but looking into the camera. You might feel like you're being rude, but people are actually going to notice that you're making eye contact with them and not looking way off or down to the side. It's going to really come across better. So give that a try. Does that make sense? Does that make sense as far as why you want to make eye contact with the camera and why you want to break eye contact strategically and why you want to lift up your laptop and not have it looking up your nose? Give me a yes if all of that makes sense. And we will move on to our next big technique that I will share with you based on a real experience that happened to me. Give me a yes if that is helpful. I see we have quite a few people getting signed in, so welcome. If you haven't introduced yourself, please do. Let me know where you're joining us from. Great to see you, Melody and Janine and Dana and Michael. Hey, Michael, great to see you here. Awesome. Okay, here is the last big strategy that I have for you, and I call this the three levels of energy technique. And I have to tell you the story here. This goes back to when we first started the Principal Center Radio podcast. I don't know if it was like at the very beginning, but it was pretty early in our first couple of episodes. We've done probably 300 episodes of Principal Center Radio now. We've been doing this for like 6 years and had a new episode pretty much every week. And in the early days, one of the things I knew I wanted to do was get a professional introduction with a voiceover, right? Like, so there's an announcer. That announcer is not an employee of the Principal Center. Like, we got a professional voice actor to do it. And there are lots of places online where you can go to hire people to do these voice intros. And I used a platform that I think doesn't exist anymore, but, you know, I found somebody with a lot of samples that I really liked. And I said, okay, this is the guy I want to do it. He had a lot of like, you know, it's truck month at Ford and, you know, Texas Ford dealers, blah, blah, you know, like he has all these really cool samples of him introducing things. So I sent him a script and he said, okay, here's what I've got for you. I did three versions. Now, here was the first version of the Principal Center Radio introduction. He said, welcome to Principal Center Radio, bringing you the best in professional practice. I don't remember the exact script, but it was, you know, very professional, very crisp, sounded really good, had a really great voice. Welcome to Principal Center Radio, bringing you the best in professional practice. And I listened to it and I thought, well, that sounds perfect. That sounds really, really great. Well, let's go ahead and listen to the second one. So we listened to the second intro that he sent us. He did these all like for one price. He didn't charge us extra for these three different versions. So played the second one and it was like, welcome to Principal Center Radio, bringing you the best in professional practice for school leaders. I thought, whoa, that's a little hypey there, but okay. You know, I appreciate the energy. It's really got the energy going here. Well, let's see what the third one is like. So we play the third file. There's MP3. Click on the link. Welcome to Principal Center Radio, bringing you the best in professional practice for school leaders. And I found myself reacting like it was one of those truck month commercials, right? It's truck month at Ford, you know, your Texas Ford dealer. And I was just like, this is insane. This person is deranged thinking that I would ever want to use such a like psychotic, over the top sounding intro to my podcast. Like, who would do that? But you know what? If you have listened to Principal Center Radio, now we've changed the intro since then. This is like 6 years ago. We've changed the intro since then. But if you have listened to Principal Center Radio, at least maybe like the first 100 episodes, I think they all have that same intro. Guess which one we ended up using when you put it in with the music, when you put it in, you know, right before the actual podcast, when you edit it all together and put on your headphones and listen to the podcast. Guess which one sounds right? Guess which one sounds best? Leave me a comment. Let me know. Is it one, two, or three? The low-key Welcome to Principal Center Radio? Is it the hyped up Welcome to Principal Center Radio? Or is it the completely deranged Welcome to Principal Center Radio? Which one do you think we use? Just give me a number in the chat. One, two, or three. Janine says three. Got to get a drink after that monster truck talk. Christopher says number three. Roseanne says three. Michael says three. Melody says two. All right. If you've heard the podcast, you might think it's two, but it's three. We ended up using the number three hyped up, over the top monster truck rally intro. And the reason is, like, when you put it all together, it just sounds right. Now, I think the music helps with it a little bit. But what that taught me, we're not here to talk about podcast intros. What that taught me is that in an online or a recorded or a virtual setting where you don't have all of the normal cues, you don't have proximity, you don't have eye contact, you don't have the sense of like where everybody is in the room, you don't have the sense of acoustics that you would normally have, you don't have your personal presence and warmth, all you have is audio and video. So the case that you are going to make, that you are the right person for the job and you deserve to move on to the next round, is going to have to be conveyed through that audio and video. And most people cannot accurately gauge how they sound. If I talk in my normal tone of voice, you will fall asleep because I am a very soft-spoken person. I do not use a lot of dynamic range when I'm speaking. You might call me boring in my normal conversational tone. So for this show, do you think I am hamming it up a bit? Let me know in the chat. Just give me a yes or no. Do you think I'm hamming it up a bit when you see me welcome you to the podcast and gesture wildly and do all these things to bring the energy? You know, we don't even have like intro music or anything here on the show. So it's all camera presence. It's all vocal range and dynamic range in terms of my volume. This, my friends, is acting. Now, I am enjoying this. I really like hamming it up for this show because I'm normally a pretty, you know, a pretty soft-spoken person, but this is a skill that you can develop. And I'm going to suggest, like, if somebody said, I will pay you $1,000 an hour to practice talking into a camera, you could probably get pretty good at this if you knew you were gonna get paid $1,000 an hour if you did a good job, right? Like, most of us could learn a new skill in a couple of weeks if we would get paid $1,000 an hour to do it, right? Well, if you are up for a promotion that will raise your salary by $30,000 a year. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's $10,000 a year in your district. If you get this job, you will get $10,000. Would you put in 10 hours of practice to get a $10,000 a year raise for the rest of your career? No brainer, right? Absolutely, you would put in that practice. So if you think, wow, I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if that's me. I promise I am more introverted than you. I promise I am at least as much of a nerd as you are, maybe more. I promise I am a pretty soft-spoken, even-keeled person. And you can learn this, all right? If you are an extrovert already, you have a big advantage on me because you're not having to try real hard to talk this way. And I had teachers as a principal, I had teachers who definitely did not have to try to talk like this. They had to like restrain themselves. You know, I had a first grade teacher in particular who was just so animated and so extroverted that she just had to constantly kind of reel it down in order to not frighten people. Everybody's different, right? Everybody is coming from a different place in terms of their energy and their tone. Here's what I want you to do to figure this out for yourself. Now, I'm not saying take your normal personality and turn it up to 11. I'm saying practice at three different levels. And here's what those levels are. Go ahead and take a screenshot of this one if you want. I think this will be really helpful to you. Level one should just be your normal way that you talk. So next time you're practicing, record yourself on video, just the normal way that you talk. For me, that's kind of a snooze fest. So that is not a very good level of energy for me. For a first grade teacher that I worked with as an elementary principal, level one for her would have been totally fine. She would have just nailed her interviews talking her normal way because she was an extrovert, she was loud, she was dynamic, she was animated. That was just her. Level two, ham it up, juice it up, add some caffeine, not actual caffeine, you know, be at your normal caffeination level, but bring the power at level two. And don't stop there though. Practice again, same question, same answer. Give yourself 5 minutes, but ham it up to level three. And at level three, this is really, really, really critical. At level three, you should feel uncomfortable with the way that you are speaking. You should have this feeling in your gut that this is just inappropriate, that this is unprofessional, that you're gonna seem like a hokey monster truck rally, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday kind of announcer. I promise, if you're doing this right, you are going to have that feeling at level three, okay? So I want you to kind of envision yourself. You can do this now if you want. I can't hear you, you know, your microphone's not on. Give yourself some practice talking at level one, the normal way you talk. Level two, hyped up to maximum energy, and level three, like you are worried that your neighbors are going to call the cops to send like a psychiatrist to your house or something. Like people should be concerned about you at level three, but it's going to vary based on what your kind of level one is, right? For some people, level three truly is insane. For some people, for other people, level three is where they actually need to be. If you're a quiet, introverted, nerdy kind of person like I am, you probably need to ham it up to level three. And the only way to find out is to practice at those three levels, do it on video, and watch all three videos back, just like I did for the podcast. And I thought the first time through, I thought level one is where we need to be. Level two is over the top. But as I listened to it more and more, as we put the music in, we realized level three was where we need to be. Now, I'm not saying that level three is where you need to be, but I'm saying you need to figure out your range. And if you are such a calm, low-key, soft-spoken person normally, level three may be it. It may be where you need to be. You can get some feedback on this, like get somebody you care about, somebody who trusts you, somebody who knows you well, to really give you feedback. You know, what is my right level of energy here? Am I a snooze fest at level one and two? Do I really need to hype it up to level three? I don't know. You've got to record some samples for somebody that you trust and give them the opportunity to give you that feedback so that you can come across with the energy that you need to. Now, of course, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do anything I say. You don't have to take my advice at all. Some of you are paying me for my advice, so I recommend that you do. This is up to you. But here's the thing. If you don't take this advice and you are up against people who are practicing for those virtual interviews, who are saying to themselves, I'm a soft-spoken, introverted person, but I'm going to bring whatever level of energy that I need to, guess who is going to win this stage of the competition and move on to the next round because they have claimed their spot in that next round. If that's not you, it's going to be somebody else. So go ahead, do that practice and commit to learning that skill, to developing that skill and bringing the right level of energy. Now, Christopher's asking, how does this help you in the interview? Now, here's the thing. Once you decide which of these three levels is the right level of energy, then you do all of your practice with that level of intensity. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to do a whole lot of practice where you've got your answers written out and you're looking at them and you're like, okay, first I want to, I'm dedicated to making sure that all students learn and data-driven instruction and blah, 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 blah. Like, you don't want to talk like that in the interview. So you don't want to practice like that when you're rehearsing for an interview. You want to do your prep, what my coaches used to call game shots from game spots at game speed, right? I was involved in basketball. I was not a basketball player, but did, you know, the nerdy stuff, stats and everything for basketball. And I was helping with basketball camp one summer. And I just heard the coaches say this over and over again, game shots from game spots at game speed. You want to rehearse the way you are going to actually interview. So if you need to really crank up the energy, crank up the energy in your practice. And that will allow you to not have to think about it so much when you're in the moment, when you're in a live interview, you're devoting your energy in the moment to thinking through your answers, right? You want to make sure that you answer the question well. So the more prep you do in advance to remember what to say, to think through a good answer in advance, and to bring the energy, like you can't think about all that at once and attend to it all in the moment. You've got to prep, you got to do that in advance. So this is something that I want you to commit to try. You don't need anything special. You've got some practice questions. You've got your phone. That is all you need. Get some feedback from someone else. And you know, if you're really brave and you have teenage kids, you could show them the video and get some feedback. I wouldn't recommend necessarily teenagers. They can be a little harsh, but you know, somebody who can be honest with you and tell you what level of intensity you need to bring. Will you do that? Are you willing to do it? Your competition may be. Christopher says, yes. Anybody else? Are you willing to practice at the right level of intensity and figure that out? What I'm going to do now is I'm going to talk in my normal tone of voice for a minute. And I just want you to see what the difference is between the level three intensity and the normal level of intensity. And you can see it's like, this would be a pretty boring show probably if I just talked in my normal tone of voice. All right, lots of yeses. Galen is saying yes. Galen is going to practice. Monica is going to practice. Kevin, hey, Kevin, great to see you here. And Melinda's going to practice. And Susan's going to practice with those levels of intensity. Fabulous. All right, let's talk a little bit about the lack of feedback. I think we mentioned this earlier. But, you know, it's very awkward for most people to talk without any feedback, without any smiling and nodding and, you know, you know, those little barely verbal comments that people make to encourage you to keep talking. They're not going to do that in a virtual interview. So you've really got to get used to talking for 5 minutes with no encouragement. It's difficult, but you will master this with just a little bit of practice. Thank you for all the responses. If you do have questions, go ahead and ask questions, and I'll be taking those in just a moment. But let's wrap this up, and then we'll get into some Q&A here. I believe that this is a skill that will serve you long term because this is not going away. Virtual interviews are not going away. By the way, have you noticed that I've ramped my intensity back up to level 3? For a minute there, I was talking at level 1, just in kind of my normal tone of voice. But I want you to stay engaged. I want you to enjoy watching this. I want this to be fun because I figure you're probably going to get more out of it if it's more fun. So anyway, this is a shift that is going to be with us. I think once we have the technology in place to do these virtual screening interviews or even the pre-recorded versions, districts are going to find that they like that. It's a lot less effort for them to screen more people in a more lightweight way without having to have so many people come in and interview in person. So this is a skill that you want to have. You probably also use video to communicate with your students, with your families, with your staff. So this is a great skill to have. It's an extremely rewarding skill to have, to be able to be engaging on video. Do you recommend smiling and nodding? If Michael, say more about that maybe, but like if you're listening, then yeah, absolutely, because they are going to be looking at you. They're not going to be looking into the camera. They're going to be looking down at the video panel. They want to see all the faces. So yeah, absolutely smile and nod when you're listening. If you had a different question, let me know and I'll speak to that as well. Okay, that is it for how to nail your next virtual interview. Use all of your time, be animated, bring the energy that you need to. Don't worry if the people on the other side of the computer are not smiling and nodding. You're not even gonna look at them. You're gonna be making eye contact with the camera and using all of your time. Douglas says, I've observed 116 teachers in the last few months and found that the best teachers spend most of their time on level 2 with occasional trips to level 3. Yeah, and like just teaching is more fun if you bring the right level of intensity, right? Marguerite's asking, is it good to use gestures such as hand movements? I would say if those are normally part of how you speak, then definitely work those into it. And if they're not, then you want to be a little bit purposeful about it. So I only use a couple of gestures. I do kind of this and I kind of do this. I don't do a whole bunch of other stuff because it's just not part of how I talk. Do whatever works for you. Try it. See what works on camera. One thing you'll notice that I don't do is I don't do a lot of like trombone kind of gestures because they get blurry. It just makes the camera confused. So I'll try to keep things kind of in the plane, the focal plane of my face. But just kind of see what works for you. Christopher, glad you're getting some good stuff out of this. Appreciate that encouragement. All right, I'm going to go into Q&A here. And I'm going to go to the top of the hour with Q&A. So if you have questions, go ahead and ask. And I'm just going to zip through the questions that have been submitted in advance. I think I have several that I didn't get to last week, as well as quite a few new ones. Let's see. Christopher is saying, what about makeup? I think makeup is definitely something to consider. Like if you have a big cold sore and it's like right in the middle of your face or something, like that could definitely be worth looking into. I have never worn makeup. I don't think it's a terrible idea, but like get somebody good to do it. You know what I mean? Like if I tried to put on makeup, it would not be probably done right. So I don't know. I'll leave that up to the, ask the people that you live with and maybe you can get some good guidance there. One thing I will say is you want to be careful about light sources. Like some light sources are just so spotlighty and bright that they'll make your face shiny. Like I have a pretty nice panel light here that's fairly soft and I can adjust the color and it doesn't wash me out a whole lot. So it kind of, you know, kind of works pretty well. I have another lamp that I can turn on. Let me see what happens if I turn on this lamp. So play with the lighting that you have. This may not make that much difference because it's not as bright a lamp. This light is much brighter than that one. And I've got a pretty good light overhead too. So yeah, play with the light. One thing to watch out if you're having only overhead light, like if you have can lights in your ceiling, you want to make sure that you don't look like a raccoon, like with your eyes deep in the sockets. Sometimes that can happen when your light is only shining down on you from above. I would say suit, yeah. Or if for men, I would say, yeah, jacket and tie. I wear a jacket and tie sitting at my computer sometimes. I think that works. But yeah, I would wear what you would wear to the interview in person. That works. Pants, you can be flexible, right? I'm wearing jeans right now. You wouldn't know if I didn't tell you. No reason to to make yourself uncomfortable. But yeah. And yeah, backlighting can be a big problem. Yeah, so you don't want to have your back to an open window during the day. All right, let's jump in to some Q&A here. Oh yeah, Galen's asking what colors to wear for a virtual interview. That is something I didn't even think about talking too much about wardrobe because I just don't think about clothing that much, but it is important. One thing you'll notice about this shirt that I'm wearing is that if you're on a little screen, it can kind of flash, and that's called moire, or some people pronounce it moire. Tiny stripes can do that. So you want to watch out for tiny stripes because they'll line up weird with the pixels and it just will make this kind of pulsing strobe effect. So actually, before I decided to keep this shirt, I got it in one of those Stitch Fix type things. And before I decided to keep it, I had to try it and I said, can I actually wear this shirt to do my shows, or will it strobe? Will it do like a weird effect? And I think it works okay, but if you're on a real small screen, it might look like it's doing that strobe thing. So, I mean, I don't think it matters a ton what you wear. I would, you know, default to what you would normally wear to an interview, but just check it, record yourself, and see if it does anything weird that you don't anticipate. Like, depending on your background, like if you're wearing a white shirt, it might wash out really bad, or if you have darker skin, it might be difficult for the camera to get the contrast right, and it might make your face hard to see, or like, just try it, you know, see what works for you. It's gonna depend on your lighting, your backdrop, your skin tone, the color of your clothes, but I would say in general, wear what you would normally wear and see if that works. Great question. Thank you for asking that. All right, I'm going to go to this question. Keep those coming in the comments here. This one, I've been to the final round for 12 positions in 18 months, only 4 checked references for 10 of the positions. 8 men were hired. So this is from a female candidate. Only one woman is hired at secondary, where I'm aiming, and only one was hired as principal with only AP experience prior. All right, let's take just that part. If you have AP experience at the high school level and you want to become a high school principal, probably that is a good logical next step for you. If you are trying to skip a level, if you're trying to go from a classroom teacher to a high school principal without ever being an AP, that is going to probably be more difficult. It sounds like this person is currently an AP and ready to be a principal at the high school level. Says about 50% were internal hires, have created a transition plan, I've been told multiple times that I'm ready. Currently a middle school admin and looking to be a principal soon. I would say the most likely position there probably then is going to be middle school principal. They're, you know, not because you couldn't do the high school principalship, but because people tend to have a lack of imagination when it comes to moving people around. So if you are a middle school person in their mind, probably that is going to be what they think of you. You know, when it comes to a promotion, they're going to think, okay, this person is ready to be a middle school principal. And if you are finding that that is not what you want, then you might want to move yourself into the position that is the next step for somebody who is going to, you know, to make that transition. So again, if you want to be a high school principal and you're not working in a high school currently, you might want to look into becoming a high school AP first. Let's see. The question here was, what can I do to make myself more marketable? I think in this case, this person is actually very marketable. And the reason I say that is look at the beginning. I've been to the final round for 12 positions in 18 months. 12 is a lot. That is a lot of times to be a finalist. So a couple of things could be happening here. One thing that could be happening for this particular administrator is that the district has people in mind for different positions and they're just waiting for the right principalship to open up to move this particular woman into. And if that is happening and, you know, things are good, it's just a matter of time. What could also be happening is that this person is only applying for internal district jobs. And I would encourage you, if you've been a finalist 12 times and never gotten the offer, I would definitely be applying outside the district because something is going on there that might be getting in your way. Like it could just be, like if they're hiring 80% men, I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but it does sound like there might be some bias there. You might just have the cards stacked against you in that particular district, and you might want to look at other districts. Let's see, anything else on that one? Being a finalist 12 times in 18 months is really good. If you're not sure how your numbers are stacking up, I want to encourage you to check out our job quiz. If you go to principalcenter.com/job, what that will do is that will evaluate your numbers. It'll ask you, you know, like how many interviews have you had? How many times have you gone on to the second round and so on? And it will advise you, like, is this a problem or is this not a problem? Now, clearly, this particular candidate who has gone on so many interviews that she got to be a finalist 12 times in 18 months, the resume and cover letter are not the problem here, right? This person is landing those interviews. They're moving on to the next round. They are doing great. Something is happening at the very end. We don't know if it's bias on the district's part. We don't know if the person freezes when the superintendent is involved in the interview. I don't know what's going on in that individual case, but that quiz, that principalcenter.com/job quiz will help you figure that out. And if you want to forward me your results and elaborate on your situation, I'd be happy to take a look. So give that a try, principalcenter.com/job. Galen's asking, if there is a presentation component to an interview before the standard panel of questions, what would you recommend for the presentation in terms of media? Balance of video clips that might have 30-second sound bites as well as images, how many slides? Probably they're going to be specific about that. They're going to tell you, make a PowerPoint presentation, or they're going to tell you, write a letter. Like they're probably going to be pretty specific about that. And the thing with video, like you could, if you edited together a video of people talking about you, it could convey a lot in very little time, but there's also the risk that it would seem over the top. There's also the risk that it might not work. So I would probably just go with what they tell you to do. Like just stick with the format. How many slides for a 10-minute presentation? I tend to use about a slide per minute just in my prep, if that's helpful, but that kind of minimizes the amount of text. Like you'll notice, I'll go back here just to a couple of different slides. Like this slide has a lot of text because it was a long question, but typically I don't have much more. This is a lot of text for me. I typically don't have more than a couple of bullet points, and I like to move kind of quickly through the slides. So I hope that is helpful. Next up, what information should be included in a cover letter and or resume that makes a huge impact on how interview panels view you as a candidate? This is a crucial question for actually getting interviews. And I found, this is really interesting, you might inquire as to why this is. I have found that people are much more interested in learning how to interview than they are in learning how to get interviews. People think it's all about the interview. And a lot of times people will let a year go by when they'll only get one interview. And the reason is they're not applying for very many jobs and their application materials are not very good. And the effort that they put into the interview prep would be better deployed improving their resume, improving their cover letter. So don't let this slip by. If you're not getting very many interviews, you might want to look at your resume and cover letter. This is kind of a big question. We have some other training on this. Let me ask, if we were to do, I've kind of got one in my mind a little bit. It's not scheduled or anything, but if we were to do a training on how to write a cover letter, would that be of interest? Let me know in the comments. Give me a yes or something in the comments if that would be of interest, a training on how to write a cover letter. We already do have one on how to write a resume. I've got a 16-page guide. If you're a member, then you should find that in your dashboard. Let me know if you are not a member and you'd like that. We can get you signed up and you can have that resume training right away. Would this be of interest to do a training on writing cover letters? Cover letters are tricky because your writing skill matters a lot, right? And it's awkward to know what to say about yourself, to, you know, what foot to put forward. Okay, lots of interest there. And this is something that I've been helping people with for years. And now I'm trying to get out of the business of helping people one-on-one because it's very time consuming and a lot of people want help with it and I have to make it expensive. So I'm trying to make things like more useful without so much of my handholding. But yeah, if that would be of use to you, then I will definitely think about that. I would say, I don't have any super quick tips on this, but I would say like put work into it, revise, get feedback. Don't submit your second draft, like really try to go 7 drafts on these documents. And that shocks people, you know, your 7th draft, like you probably haven't done a 7th draft of anything since like college, right? But it's really worth it. It really is worth the effort there. Michael's asking, is it a good idea to use the same cover letter for several districts? I would say if it fits, sure. If it fits, like, well, you don't want to use a cover letter that just doesn't match the district. Like if you apply to a really diverse district and you say in your cover letter, I'm really committed to working in a diverse environment where I can make a difference for students and blah, blah, blah. And the people in the next district over that you apply to are reading it and you're like, we're not a diverse district. I don't know where you got that. Like customize it, right? But yeah, absolutely. Don't feel like you have to start from scratch. In fact, do not start from scratch. right? It's so much wasted effort to start from scratch. Revise for the district that you're applying for. And that way, every time you apply for more job, you know, into more districts, you're iterating on your documents. Yeah, align it with the position. And Douglas is absolutely right here. The cover letters are a writing sample. Yeah, like part of the reason that people read cover letters, even though it's time consuming, is they want to make sure, like, can you put two sentences together? It really is part of the hiring criteria to make sure that principals can write. It's important. And if that's not your strong suite, you know, get some help with it. Next up, what is the best way to sell yourself or have an interview that makes an enormously positive impact on the interview panel during the interview? Well, a lot of what we talked about today covers that. I would say the energy really matters. Using all your time matters. The other thing that I would say is make sure your answers are really substantive. Like, it's amazing how much people can sometimes talk without saying anything. Make sure your answers are substantive. And the best way to do that is to bullet them out. Write them out in bullet point answers. I've got 52 questions that you can practice with. And, you know, I don't know what you're specifically going to be asked, but these 52 questions cover pretty much all the bases. There's a little bit of overlap between them. You'll see several questions on the same theme that'll prompt you to think about different aspects of the question and different, you know, different experiences that you might want to mention, but actually print those out. Like, use an old-fashioned printer. You know, we're not talking about a PDF. I'm not talking about on a tab. Like, print these out on paper, write your answers out on paper, you know, staple it all together and carry it around with you. And really, like, the time to think about it will make a big difference. Just thinking about a good answer in the moment is not good enough. You really want to prep this in advance. Galen says, looking at the posting, some of the best advice I've had for cover letters and applications is to look at the posting and then weave in stories into the cover letter that demonstrate those bullets. This may include quotes from those you've worked with that speak to the stories or bullets you're addressing. Yeah, wonderful idea. Love that. Thank you, Galen. That's fantastic. All right, next question here. Virtual interviews, let's see, to maintain confidence, make a positive impact, is there a certain way we should conduct ourselves during virtual interviews? I think that was actually the question that inspired the whole show. So yes, I'm not gonna repeat myself. Go watch the first half of this again. I think we covered that one pretty substantially today. Next up, a new position in my district will open shortly, a new elementary, tips on landing this new opportunity. New schools opening. Ooh, exciting stuff. Has anybody here ever opened a new school, either as a teacher or as an administrator? Thank you, Douglas. I appreciate that. Have you ever opened a new school? A principal that I worked with got to open one shortly after we worked together. I'd already become a principal. I wasn't his dean anymore, but then shortly after that, he got to open a new school. Here's what I advised this person, and this probably will not come as a shock. This person was an assistant principal. And I said, that's very exciting. Fabulous. Go for it. But do not get your heart broken if you don't land it. And here's why. A new school, opening a new school is an enormous amount of work. The sheer number of decisions that you have to make to open a new school means that the district would kind of have to be desperate or crazy to appoint somebody to open a new school who had never been a principal before. So I said to her, you know what? I'm sure you're going to be great. I think you should go for it, but really do not let it get you down at all if they give this to a sitting principal. If they just move somebody over, they say, you've been a successful principal for a long time, you open the new school. That is the smart thing to do on the district's part. So, like, don't be mad at them. Don't be mad at yourself. Don't feel disappointed. Don't give up if that happens. And hey, if they have to move a sitting principal, guess what that creates at that school that principal is leaving? That creates a vacancy. So you're much more likely to get that vacant position that's left by the person who opens the new school than you are as a not current principal to open a new school. So hope that is helpful there. There's a lot of stuff in the process that doesn't feel great, but to not take personally, right? Like, if you know that it makes sense for the district to give the job to somebody else, like, don't take that as a discouraging sign for yourself, right? And that's what I told her. Don't take this as discouraging. Yeah, Linda says they normally go with an experienced principal. Absolutely. Next up, this person was responding to my advice that you apply for lots and lots of jobs. You know, don't just spray them out there. Don't just blast them out on monster.com or whatever people are using these days. Do put out good applications, but also plan to put out a lot of applications. 25 to 50, I think, is a good number if you're in an area where there are that many openings. And this person said, I completely understand about applying for a whole lot of jobs to increase your chances of landing an interview, but should I be worried about burdening my references with all those annoying reference check emails that land in their inbox? Now, a lot of people will hear this and say, what are you talking about? There are many districts around the country that use some sort of automated reference check system. And it'll ask you, who are your references? You put in your current supervisor and whoever else they ask for in the way of references. And then their system automatically sends an email to those people that says, hey, Justin has applied for a job in our district. We are not even going to consider Justin for our candidate pool if you don't complete the reference check down below. So they get a little link, they fill out a little thing that, you know, asks them some questions about you, and they're asked to rate you. And if they fill out that rating form, then you are eligible to be considered. And if they don't, well, my friend, you are out of luck. And I know this because the program that I went through for principal certification had a lot of candidates from one particular district that relied on this type of system. And in some cases, their references did not follow through. And guess what happened? Well, if your references do not help you out, you do not get considered and you do not get even close to getting a job. So this is real in some places. It's not the case everywhere. You know, most districts, I think, don't use a system like this. But if the districts that you're applying to do, you've got to get it right. You've got to follow up with your references and make sure that they submit those reference checks. And typically the system will notify you, or like there's a way you can check and make sure that they do, but you got to stay on top of it. For this person, it sounds like they are in a place where either all of the districts around them have adopted the same system. That happens, like similar districts or districts in a geographic area tend to adopt the same software and hiring processes as they compete with one another, and people move between the districts and bring ideas with them. Like they tend to kind of converge on the same practices. Or it could be that in this case, for every single school that you apply to, there's a reference check. So you could apply to one district, 10 different openings, and your references get 10 different reference checks. You're like, geez Louise. So couple of ways that you can handle this. First of all, what you've got to do more than anything else is you've got to talk to your references and you've got to recruit them. You've got to get them on board and get them to agree to help you in your job search. And you want them to help you not just for the sake of their advice. You want them to help you so that they are invested in your success. It's a funny thing that happens when people are invested in your success. They really will go out of their way in pretty remarkable ways to help you succeed. They will put in a good word for you. They will network for you. They will mention you to people who are in their network who are hiring. They will forward you job openings that people send them. I mean, like I went through my certification program in 2006, and I still get job openings sent to me by my program. Like, so their network is very valuable to you if you will enlist their support. And you may have to have a conversation, say, I'm really sorry to ask this, but I feel like you're probably going to get about 15 reference checks for me. If it would help, like you can make a document and just save all your answers there. I am so sorry to have to send you all these. And it's my goal to get you off the hook for this as quickly as possible by getting a job as quickly as possible. I don't want to burden you, but are you willing to do these for me? Just knowing it's going to be kind of a pain in the butt for a couple of weeks. And they will probably say yes, or they might say something other than yes, but you want to hear that from them. You want to get that commitment rather than just surprise them. Because if you surprise them, here's what's going to happen if you surprise them. They're going to be annoyed. Right? They're going to say, oh, geez, you got to be kidding me. I'll get to that when I get to it. And then they're never going to get to it. So have the conversation. It is worth the awkwardness of having that conversation. Susan says, yeah, let references know before applying so they have a heads up. Never surprise your references. Speaking of which, next question here, and we're going to have to wrap in just a few minutes, but I'll stay on till the top of the hour. My school won't be supportive if I am on the job hunt. But I need to move on to the next phase of my career and to a new environment. Probably a good call. If you think that is the case, that is probably the case. How do I navigate the job search without raising any red flags at my school? How do I answer the school district applications that ask for current supervisor's contact? Okay, a couple of things here. So if you are in a toxic environment, if you have a supervisor who is just a jerk, if you have a supervisor who will not support you, then the most important thing you can do is leave. Take a lateral position, like make a lateral move if you need to. In some cases, you might even choose to walk away. You might choose to quit without a safety net. You might choose to take a demotion. You know, you might say, I've been a principal, but I would rather be an AP. I'd rather be a dean of students than work for this turkey one more year. If that's what you've got to do, that is what you have got to do. And I have heard from many people over the years who've been told, I will not support you. I do not think you deserve more responsibility. I don't even like you. I've heard it all. I've heard people say, you are wonderful, you are amazing, you are the glue that holds this school together, but so help me, I will not let you leave under any circumstances. And it's like, that's pretty unprofessional, but people get, you know, people get desperate. People get attached to the people that they're working with. They don't want to lose them, and they're not supportive. I don't think that's right, but if that's the situation you're in, know that you are not alone. You are not the only person who's ever faced that. And the right move is to get out of there, right? Do the best you can to get a similar job. It's okay if it's not a promotion. Find a place where you will be valued, where you will be respected, and where you will be supported in moving on when the time is right. So don't feel like all is lost. Don't feel like you have no options. Get out of there if you need to. Yeah, you have to interview the culture that you're applying to, Douglas is. Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes you don't know in advance, right? Sometimes everything's great when they're hiring you, and then once you get on board, then you start to see kind of the ugly side. That happens as well. In terms of asking for a current supervisor's contact information, you can kind of pick who your current supervisor is to some extent, right? Like if you have a good relationship with your area director, but not your principal, sometimes it's okay to put the area director and bypass the principal. That person may still get called, so it's probably still worth having the conversation with them so that they are not too caught off guard. They may still say, no, I'm not going to support you, but you can at least not surprise them. You can kind of make the case like, this is what I need to do. You know, this is where my career is heading. You know, you don't want to insult them or anything, but you do want to kind of give them a heads up that this is a move that you're looking at making. And sometimes, like, this can be tricky, but sometimes you can actually say, look, I do not have a good relationship with my current supervisor. It's not a good situation. They're not in a good position at the moment. You know, sometimes it's appropriate to have that conversation. It's kind of on a case-by-case basis. I sometimes do recommend that. So let's see. I got my admin credential 10 years ago. Not sure when I would use it. In that time, I've been trying to get into an admin role at the school. How do I answer questions based on experience in administration since I don't have much experience? Well, the good news is, I want you to think about this with me. The good news is, everybody who gets a promotion gets the job based on experience at a lower level. Everybody who ever gets a promotion got it without experience at that level. And if you think about it for a second, this is only logical, right? It only makes sense that everybody has to get promoted at some point beyond their current level of experience, right? Or else nobody would ever be qualified to be a principal, right? If nobody had ever been a principal before, well, like eventually all the current principals are going to die. And how are we going to have principals if we can't hire people who haven't been principals before, right? So everybody gets promoted at some point into the position that they currently have without that experience. So what you've got to understand about experience is that experience at your current level is what prepares you to move to the next level. And you've got to be the one to make the translation and to say, well, I haven't been an actual principal before, but how can I convince them that the experience I do have is relevant? Well, the first step is convincing yourself that it's relevant. So if the question is, how do you develop a vision for your school? As principal, you are responsible for developing and implementing the vision for instructional improvement. How do you do that? Well, you could say to yourself, on the one hand, you could say, well, I've never been a principal, so I can't answer that question. Well, give yourself some credit. You could say to yourself, well, I haven't been the principal, but I have done a lot to convey a vision for improvement. In fact, that's something that's been really important to me at every stage of my career. When I'm working with students and helping them choose their courses as a counselor, that's part of, you know, part of that is really helping them envision what their next level of success looks like. So you kind of can almost use your experience as a metaphor for the job that you're applying for, even if it's not a direct correlation. Sometimes, you know, it could be students, it could be teacher leadership, it could be committees that you've been on, it could be things outside of school. Maybe you're on the board of a nonprofit, or maybe, you know, some other type of leadership experience other than the actual job you're going for. Don't be afraid to draw in outside examples and say, this demonstrates that. You got to be a little bit creative here. Let's see. Michael says, my background is in career tech. When I apply for most AP positions, they hire someone with an academic background. I don't think you're at any disadvantage there, Michael. I think you're in great shape. I think just numerically that happens because there are more language arts and math teachers than any other subject, you know, because everybody takes 4 years of those subjects in high school. So I don't think you're at any disadvantage at all. And I've seen lots of people with but you've got to decide, right? Like, you've got to decide, what is it about my teaching background that makes me stand out as an AP? And then just say that, right? I've noticed a ton of people who become administrators or like like music teachers. And I think it has to do something with like orchestrating a lot of people that makes that appealing to them. But yeah, you decide what makes that work. Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're gonna run out of time before we get to, oh no, I think we might make it here if I go fast enough. How do you answer questions related to your management of situations with COVID? How you'd improve cultural engagement, academic loss, teacher reduction due to COVID, et cetera. I would say plan this like any other question. So write out your bullet point answers, think of the things that you've done this year, try to include some good stories, and take notes over time. Like, don't count on yourself to think through this in the moment. Print out those questions or add questions, you know, if you have a COVID specific question, add to your answer to that over time. And like, you'll wake up in the middle of the night with something that's popped into your head and you can add that to your list. So just plan ahead, practice over time. Last question, can you provide some examples of superpowers? This is on our Ascend trail map, which I don't have on my slides here. I need to add that to my slides for next time. But superpowers are those things that make you stand out. So back to Michael's question here. If you've been a career tech teacher and you are thinking, what really makes me stand out as an AP? Well, again, that's up to you. You could say, I'm really good at helping kids decide what kind of adult they want to be. They're going to be adults in a couple of years. And I love that process of helping them figure out what kind of adults they're going to be, because that's a decision that they make every day, right? That is a decision that students make when they show up to school every day. They decide, what kind of person am I going to be today? And over time, the sum of those choices determines what kind of person they're going to be in life. Right. So I just made that up. You can make up something for yourself of how your experience makes you the ideally qualified person for this job. Make that case to yourself when you're practicing, and it'll go so much more smoothly in a real interview. And some examples of superpowers. We talk more about this in some other places, but your superpowers really are things that make you stand out. They're not just things like I'm hardworking and collaborative. They're like unique qualifications. So particular to your background, like you want to be the only person with your particular superpower, the way you describe it. So just think about whatever your background is and your particular set of skills. All right, we have got to run here. We will keep this up. I haven't confirmed next week's show, but we will probably keep this up for the next couple of weeks because this is fun. One of the questions I got that several people have contacted me about recently is around the question of coaching. Do you provide coaching? The answer is yes, but it's really expensive. So feel free to check that out. I don't expect this to be a good fit for a lot of people. Sometimes it may make sense. I have to charge a lot because it takes a lot of time. And I know I've got many of my clients on here today that I'm working with, and I want to protect the time that I've already devoted to them. So do feel free to check that out. But I do want to let you know what we're doing here, because this is going to be kind of exciting. I've been thinking about the job search pretty much full time for the last week as hiring season has come upon us, and we're filming an all new Ascend Masterclass. I'm very excited about this. We talked about it a little week last week on the show, and I want to make sure that I cover everything in this for the reason that I can no longer afford the time that it takes to help people one-on-one. I really cannot. Every year I've taken on a few new clients to support in the Ed Leadership job search, and I just can't, like, that's not sustainable. I can't take new people all the time, or I don't have the time that I need to support the people that I do work with and get anything else done. I'm trying to write a book. So selfishly, my goal here is to not have to do so much direct support by taking the advice that I'm giving my clients and putting that into more like self-service. Here's how you can do this for yourself. And there are some areas like cover letters that I really have never done that before with, where like I can help you write a good cover letter, but I've never produced a training that would help you without me write a good cover letter. So that's what I'm working on right now. And what I need is real examples to work through. So I'm not taking any more Ascend Masterclass clients that I've worked with, you know, the way that I've worked with people in the last couple of years. I just don't have the time. And again, I do offer coaching for a variety of purposes, but it's super expensive, and I don't want to really promote that because honestly, I don't want to do that much of it. I just don't have the time at any price point. But what I want to do here is get this new program out to you as quickly as possible based on your specific questions. So what I've done is I have dramatically reduced the price on the Ascend Masterclass, the new version. So this is going to be completely new, and it does not include coaching, but I need your examples to get this filmed, right? I want to think through real situations. I'm not going to put like your resume in it or your problem or your situation, but in answering your questions, helping you with your resume, I am going to get the insights that I need to make this new version. And I'm working on that right now. I'm well underway with my slides. And what we're gonna do to account for the fact that it's not done yet, right? I haven't filmed any of this yet. What we're gonna do is we're gonna knock basically $959 off that and make this essentially the same price as our Instructional Leadership Association membership. So it is $536. You get lifetime access to the Ascend Masterclass. Feel free to check that out. I don't have a whole big thing on it today. If that's a good fit, you can go to principalcenter.com/ascend. And I think, let me double check that we have that open, because it's been on a wait list, and I haven't even sent an email to the people who are on the wait list yet. But if you go to principalcenter.com/ascend, yeah, it should let you register if you want to. I expect you to have questions. I didn't really give you a lot of information, so if you want to know more about that, feel free to email me, and I will be happy to get back to you. We can talk about your situation. If you are already a member, a Principal Center member, you're paying for a Principal Center membership of some sort, check with me first. You probably do not need to sign up for this because we will be putting this into your account, and I'd be happy to help you. So if you're already a member, I know we had many, many members on here. But if you're not a member, if you're not paying anything to the Principal Center, just reach out, check that out, see if that's a good fit. And we will keep it up. So keep those questions coming in. You can go to principalcenter.com/ascendlive to send in a question and to see what the next week's topic is. I'll try to get that out to you in advance so that you can plan to attend if that's a relevant topic. But that is it for today. This has been How to Nail Your Next Virtual Interview. Go get them, apply for those jobs, put in those applications, prep for those interviews, practice your answers, and you're going to move on in the process, and you're going to get the offers that you're looking for. So thank you so much for being here. This has been a blast. I have enjoyed hamming it up for you. I have enjoyed sharing a little bit behind the curtain, behind the scenes of how I do these shows and make eye contact with the camera and gesticulate wildly and use more dynamic range in my voice to come across the way that is entertaining, the way that is fun for the people on the other side of the computer. So have fun with this, and we'll talk soon. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.